that time again for Wisdom in Golf and Golf WRX. How are you, everybody?
Hey, hello, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
We got a fabulous guest all the way down from the, well, down from Arizona and back to the West Coast. You're back home. It's Bryce Barker. Welcome to the show, Bryce.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad to be here, excited to talk, and yeah.
We've had some really cool back and forth. Bryce is an aspiring tour player and is just a brilliant left-handed golfer. I would say, you know, reminds me a little bit of Mike Weir as far as the accuracy and the style. Very, very similar style of player than Mike Weir. And, you know, looking forward to seeing the brilliant things that you're going to do in the future, man.
I appreciate the compliments. That's I haven't heard that one before, but I really like that. Can't be opposed to a Masters winner being compared to that.
Well, that's it. I mean, I spent a little bit of time watching Mike when he was at Taboo. I was the director of instruction there from 2002 to 2005, and you know, Mike was calling Taboo his home course, and I had the pleasure to actually give his dad a couple of lessons while they were there, and it was just so much fun, you know, following him around, and you could just tell that there was some brilliant things about to happen. This was in 02, so I knew 03 was going to be a great year, and of course it was. And then it continued into 04 until he almost won the Canadian Open, and then, you know, the little bit of a struggle after that. But man, it was just for a couple of years there. It was incredible just watching him and seeing what was developing and being a raving, you know, Canadian fan. So we get to be another raving Canadian fan here with Bryce, and you just got back from a really cool week, didn't you?
It was an action packed, lots of learning. Yeah, full week. I can go into that obviously if you want.
Yeah, would love to. You spent some time with Lynn and Pia the 54 gang.
Yeah. So, it all really started. I was, I'll plug another lefty, but Will Bateman had a great year last year on, the Canadian tour, won the, you know, overall money. So direct spot into the Corn Ferry. And I kind of saw an interview, my dad put me onto with him, and he was talking about his mental game and how that's really, changed his perspective, but also just maybe elevated to him to another level. So I kind of researched that, and I was gonna go potentially see his exact psychologist or whatnot, but I decided to go back to Vision 54 after I had actually already spent some time with them 2 years ago and ended up having a great year on the Vancouver tour previous to that. But for some reason, us golfers, we decide to, you know, maybe not stick with what's working. And I didn't necessarily stick with that and maybe got back into a bit of a hole. So long story short, got back with them, did a little practice session. So they go through a bunch of practice stations with you and kind of go through all the play box, memory box, think box. So that's kind of their, you know, philosophy is just human skills rather than technical skills, let's say. So that's a big thing that I see is, you know, missing in golf instruction potentially, and just kind of one of those maybe little missing pieces that could actually elevate a player's ability. So got in with them, got the chance to do a 3-day camp with them as well, and I learned so much. I ended up playing an event 2 days after that camp and had one of my first top 10s on the Asher tour, previous Outlaw tour, and just had, you know, an amazing week, and I can just feel the growth on top of what already we've been working on, me and you, Sean, and just having that extra little mental game now to bring to the table.
Exactly. And, you know, we talked about if any outfit out there was going to really coordinate well with what we do at Wisdom in Golf, it's definitely them. You know, it's when we talk about flight plan and, you know, matching your setup to the flight plan, there's the think box, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The memory box, correct me if I'm wrong, but that would go that's probably premotor cortex. And I've had a couple of discussions with Dr. Joe Parent, and he was very surprised at the knowledge I had about the premotor cortex. He actually had to go back and sort a few things out and come back to me. And he said, yeah, you're absolutely correct. This is, you know, you really need to, you know, so when you're talking about memory box, it's bringing back or conjuring up the successful golf shots that you've had and the feelings and sensations that that you've had with those successful golf shots that are going to help you execute the shot that you have at hand, right?
Exactly. And to go on to that, I mean, I had some notes down, but I'll get to those after. But basically with that memory box, we talked about obviously holding memories, good shots, bad shots, but we as golfers know what's the biggest thing we hold on to. It's usually the negative. So I guess the way they explained it is our brain works on a 3-to-1 negative bias. So, you know, every 3 negative things, we maybe have 1 positive. So after my round this past week, I shot a 65 the second day. What was the first thing I could go back to typically as a golfer instead of being like, wow, I just had a great day, hold out for eagle from 80 yards, chipped in, you know, hit a bunch of fairways, hit a bunch of greens, made, you know, committed to all my shots. But us as a very, you know, professional and very hard on ourselves, well, I bogeyed the first hole. Mm-hmm. You know, that could have been a 64. I missed that last putt. That could have been a, you know, and yeah. It's just so funny how our brains, regardless of how good we're, you know, playing or whatever,
yeah,
it goes back to that. I the first round, I had 16 pars, 1 birdie, and a double. And the double ended up coming at the 15th hole, so later in the round. And that just looms as that negative. So what we're trying to build with them is, you know, they really taught, okay, let's create a 3-to-1 positive bias. So, you know, going through after rounds, what you did good. So, yeah, you're really building that memory box of what's good rather than always being negative. And that's where they even think a lot of the chipping yips and stuff like that come in, is you're already over the ball, basically negative, and yep. All you have is negative emotions. And emotions, they said also emotions move faster than like
ration.
Yeah. Or just like expression, like, you know, before you even express something or say something about the shot, you've already emotionally felt something.
Yeah.
So just correlating that. But I mean, yeah, with you in the memory box too, it's just, and a lot of coaches just say this, is like, see the good shots. But I think the big thing with them is also, what do you do when you can't see those shots? Or, you know, how do you get yourself into a better memory box or a better think box and just make better commitments overall?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you know, you're standing over the shot and, you know, there's, for so many players, the fear is what causes the negative, right? Because you're fearful of doing something wrong.
Exactly.
And then immediately there's the negative that starts pouring into the system. And you look at the brain chemistry that goes along with that, right? All the cortisol.
Yep.
And I mean, you could just go into this spiral of doom so fast in so many different situations, you know. So when, you know, when we're working on the specific routine, it's, well, what do you want to do? And that brings the positive, of course, because you're not going to want to do something negative. That's an oxymoron right there. I mean, it just doesn't fit. So you figure out what you want, then you match yourself up to that, and then you match the feel to that. So the feel of what's a feel? What would a successful shot feel like here? What would a positive shot feel like? And then you're matching the feel to that specific shot, and then it's just executing, and staying on that. And I think that that early bogey that you made was a slap in the face for you to focus. Hey, that's not what I want. This is what I want, right? So that's like Sam Snead used to play cool mad, and that was one of his best states of play. You know, you make a silly bogey, and then it kicks you in the rear end, and then you go, hey, wait a second. That's not what I want. This is what I want.
Exactly. And that day was, you know, cut day and all that. So, yeah, you make an early bogey, you better smarten up.
That's quick, it. Right?
And it's like such a mental muscle that you have to practice to reverse that negative mindset, because so easily it could have been, oh, well, I started off with a bogey, like, here we go again kind of thing, right? And you have like that woe is me kind of thing, which I've definitely felt before. But being able to actually turn that around into something positive and let it be like a fire is something that, like, yeah, people say you can do it and you have to do that, but it takes actual practice to put that into motion. So it's really cool that you were able to, you know, turn that around.
The image that comes to mind is in Rocky III when he gets, you know, hammered to the mat and bounces right back up with freaking, you know, that laser focus in his eyes, right?
Well, I feel like I've experienced that kind of like bounce back and fire in soccer. Mm. And that was like never a question for me. Mm-hmm. But in golf, it's totally different.
You've experienced it in long drive.
Yes, I have experienced it in long drive.
There you go. And it's just a matter of time. So it's something that, you know, hey, this is what I want to do. So, you know, and then my hat's off to you, Bryce, for doing what's necessary to move yourself towards your goal, right? Your goal is to be one of the best players in the world, to play the PGA Tour, to play at the highest level. You have the skill, and now you're going to be matching up that skill with your mental game. And every, you know, like right after your training, you went out and you were able to apply a lot of it. And then it's like at one point, you know, you get tired of, hey, you know what? I'm not going to go there anymore. I'm going to stay right here. Right? This is where I'm going to stay because this is what I want. And then you build confidence on that and look out. You know, this is where the good stuff comes.
Yep.
I totally. And even to go on top of like what you were saying there, Savannah, I have been that woe is me golfer too. It's like, you know, you think you know you have the skill for sure, right? And in soccer especially, or any other team sport, it feels like we can just turn that on and you know, get a little aggressive or whatever, and it's fast. Whereas I think the issue maybe with the golf is there's, you know, especially some of our rounds, 5-6 hours of just grind, and me and you talked about this, Sean, trying not to make it a grind and whatnot, but you know, sometimes that's what it is, and you got to grind through that adversity, and that's what I found after the first day is like, was I really committed? Was I really like, you know, letting go of the results or whatever on the putts and like really giving it a go? So I think that's where the second day I kind of took that training that I did have and just, you know, maybe kicked it in a little bit more, like, you know, okay, I'm not going to be woe is me. I'm going to really commit to this shot, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Sean, as well, is that my previous tournament hit six greens one day, and I probably hit, you know, 15 fairways or whatever the number was. And I'm kicking myself. And I think I just got now into the commitment. It's like, you can't be making sure. You can't be, okay, hopefully this doesn't go right. hopefully this doesn't go left. You know, we've practiced so much and, you know where it's kind of going. So,
well, and that's the thing too. You know, it's nice to know that the science behind it is, well, since you can't ever repeat anything exactly the same way, then you can't make sure. So your only modus operandi is, this is what I want, this is where I'm going, this is the field I'm applying to it, and that's that. And then here's the execution, and we get to see what happens now. And when you're in that wait and see with, you know, that that kind of authority, then that's when the good stuff happens.
Yeah, totally. And along with that is just staying committed to the finish of the shot. And the big thing I learned with the Vision 54 is having that play box. So, you know, we got our think box, we decide the flight plan and everything. And, you know, it's just creating whatever feels good for you. So for some people, it might be internal. So grip pressure, tempo, whatever. Others, it might be external, seeing the shot, cutting the dandelion, whatever.
But
you just got to stay till you got to finish that exact feel, instead of, you know, so easy, you get over the ball. Okay, I'm committed, but then, like, are you really, you know? And that's what I was learning even more. And even watching the other players I was playing with, it was amazing to see just what other guys were thinking now after what I had learned, you know, guys pulling out of shots and the swearing, the negative. It's just amazing. It's eye opening.
The self abuse out there is just unbelievable.
It's crazy. Like, yeah, we're all guilty of it. And it's like, you see somebody else do it while you're in a round and you're like, is that what I look like too when I'm going through it? And it's like, maybe that's not a great look.
You got to be your own best friend. What an a-hole.
I find the memory box thing really cool, because when you mentioned that, I directly thought about, so for me growing up playing soccer, my absolute favorite thing was to play under the lights, nighttime games. And that brings back so many, like, it just floods my body with
warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, warm and fuzzies. And I'm so happy that my first ever long drive competition was under the lights at a soccer complex, because I instantly didn't, because I had that like core memory of just bliss. I wasn't as nervous as I expected to be. I wasn't as like intimidated as I thought I would be. And it was just like, it, like I walked up to the venue with the lights on, and, you know, on the soccer field. And I was like, oh, this like feels like home.
Well, and that's where you went into a playoff for the eighth spot to make the top eight.
Yeah.
And you killed it.
It's just crazy how when you have those amazing core memories, those positive memories that you can, you know, hold on to during an intimidating situation that you're in the present moment, it's amazing what a difference that state of mind makes for you. And I had never experienced that in like tournament golf.
Right.
I never had that warm and fuzzy moment in tournament golf to where I could, you know, hold on to that memory and put myself into that situation.
And I think, Bryce, this is, there it is. You stay long enough in the game, you'll have some, if you know, it's like every squirrel finds a bloody nut, and you'll be able to find some memories and go, hey, you know, I was under the gun and I came through in flying colors in that situation right there. And then you take that and you build on that for the next event, and then you pick up a few more, and then all of a sudden you're going, hey, top 10, hey, another top 10, and then you're like on your way.
Yeah, you build like up this memory bank.
And that's that. I think that's what happened to Tony Finau.
It's a matter of time, right?
Exactly. Tony Finau, you remember David Duval, you know, there's a lot of late bloomers. Ben Hogan was the ultimate late bloomer. And then, you know, you wake up and you go, hey, I got this.
But how cool is it that golf is a sport where you can totally be a late bloomer and it not be like, it's not like a conversation, because in so many other sports,
it doesn't have the same urgency.
Yeah, and there's like different primes, and like you can't play like football when you're 45, 50 years old. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like you there's a time for some sports, whereas in golf, you have like your whole life.
That's it. Well, you know, Vijay Singh he went into his prime at age 41.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's when he became number one in the world. Mm. That's you know, so there's. It's everybody has their own timetable, and it's it really is how you know. So you made a huge step, Bryce. I'm you know, really, really proud. Hats off to you, and you're exactly where you need to be, buddy.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and you know, you're right on too with the timeline and stuff. I mean, it's easy for me. You know, I'm 29, so I'm not young, not old necessarily, but like. You know, you play the Canadian tour with guys just out of college and, you know, these names. Oh, you know, he won, you know, the NCAA national championship. And it's like, well, yeah, that's great and all. And he can hit it 340, but, you know, they still got to put the ball in the hole. And that's, and it's all a mental game.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not a game of consistency, as we know, as much as we want it to be. You know,
well, I think it's where it starts, Bryce, as far as consistency is concerned, is in your mental approach.
And it is back onto the Finau. It's like he's stuck with it. He hasn't necessarily changed. He doesn't necessarily, he might have, you know, he's changed putting grips and whatever, but I don't know if he's changed coaches necessarily.
No, he hasn't. But he's still
really
the same guy.
Stuck to the process.
Yep.
And it's so hard to do that, as we know, you know, if something's not working. But I really think now with even learning this Vision 54 and what we're working on and the simplicity of it to make it consistent is definitely going to make it more consistent than it was and all that. And yeah, I feel refreshed.
Yes.
And I feel so much about what we worked on has now been able to blossom better because I've just understood, you know, I got to commit over the ball. You can't be wavering.
That's it.
Or what, you know, multiple times I stepped in this past week and just said, are you even sure what you want to do? Let's just get back here. Okay. You know, going to hold the finish to the end, throw the club down the line. Okay. Boom. Let's just do that. And that's all I'm thinking about till the end of the shot.
That's it. You find a way to stay with it.
And on top of kind of, sorry, going back to what you were saying, Savannah, and feeling that comfort even,
mm-hmm.
I probably wasn't really comfortable the whole time, but I was having fun because I was making birdies and I was hitting shots and giving myself chances. But I still haven't necessarily felt the like total comfortability out there,
mm-hmm.
but I'm having more fun just being able to let go a little bit.
Yeah. It's important to be able to have fun out there.
You know, I felt like sometimes even my drives, my tee balls, for example, I'm holding back a little bit because that, you know, even though I have more speed, I'm holding back because I want to control it. But then when I do need to let go a bit, I hit these amazing drives because I am like, I know I need to like just let go and get some speed or whatever. And I just feel the freedom more.
Well, it's the thing about that, Bryce, is, you know, the kinetic chain, when there are two enemies to your swing. Manipulation or steering and effort. So when you let it go, you're engaging that kinetic chain in a very, very positive way. And when it engages, it's unstoppable. And then when it engages really, really well, when you grab that ground, it's that's when you have the most stability and the most precision. As soon as you start to be careful and you put a little tension in there, then it kind of sputters. And then when it starts to sputter, then you feel like you're helping it either way, or you feel like you gotta help it get out there. And then all of a sudden you're not releasing, you're blocking, it's easy to unravel that way. So when you're practicing, hey, there's a shot I want. There's a setup that's going to give me the shot. I've shown up for it, right? I've shown up for this golf shot. And this is the feel I need to execute with, and I'm going to stay with it. I'm going to hold, I'm going to hold my focus's hand all the way to the end, and then we're going to get to see how this works.
Yeah.
instead of bailing out halfway going, I just couldn't do it. Right.
Yeah. No, that's it's just watching that on the course. It was hilarious. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's so, I found it very interesting to see how other people on the course that I played against, you know, manage themselves. And I played in a couple of the East Coast Pro Tour events, and I got paired up with a professional female golfer. She's, I think, in her early 40s, but she's been playing like tournament golf for a really long time.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see how, even if things weren't necessarily going super well, she was able to, you know, keep that mindset in the right place.
Yeah.
In order, because she always had that mindset of, well, you know, I can do it. I can do it on the next shot. I can do it. And that's something that obviously she's had years of experience doing. Right. So it's a lot easier for her to put that into play. But that was really cool to see, because
it's showing up for yourself on every shot.
It's showing up for yourself. And not necessarily just on every shot, but just like just showing up for yourself, period.
Yeah.
Which is super important.
It's so easy to give up too. Right?
Yeah.
Like again, watching other players, you know, guy's not having a good day. Maybe he's a couple over through, you know, nine or whatever. You can still make shoot even par, but so many times they just, you know, you just give up.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, don't set up for the putt. Don't set up for the tap in. Don't take your time. Just like, you know, get just a little bit of time, you know,
be present. Whatever. Yeah. Be present for every shot and not have, you know, this is just, what's the point, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you show up for every shot and then you end up, that's when you end up getting positives, right?
Exactly.
'Cause then you say, this is what I wanted and I got it. Okay, let's do that again.
Yeah. And I had one of those moments at the tournament that I was playing with that lady. It was, what was the tournament again? It was over near Ottawa somewhere.
Castleview, yeah.
Yeah, and we got to onto the back nine. I think it was hole number 10 or 11. And, you know, things weren't going super well and blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
And I started not feeling well. That was actually when I got COVID.
Oh.
And so I wasn't feeling well during the round, but not knowing like what was going on kind of thing. And so I just like kind of didn't really have any more expectation for the round. And I put one right down the middle fairway, short par four, had a wedge in my hand, thinned the wedge over the green, like blade it pretty much.
Yeah.
And then I was stuck like short sided behind the green in between two trees. I was like, dang, like, come on. Like, as if this is happening to me right now.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, right? And I ended up freaking chipping it in the hole.
Chipping in the hole.
Yeah. I chipped it. It was like this. I had to pull off this weird flop shot kind of through the trees chip. And I ended up putting it in the hole, and Moo and I just looked at each other like, what the heck? And then
it's like nature set it up for you.
Yeah. And then the rest of the round, it was fun.
Yeah. You just reacted to your environment. I mean, that's when it's fun, right, Bryce? I mean, you've had some really good low rounds, and and sometimes it's just a little momentum change during the round, and then you go, and then
just a little wind in your sails.
That's it. You get on that you get on that birdie train.
It doesn't even make sense when it happens.
And literally.
That's a good way to put it.
For example, even actually, we play these skins games down here, and Papago, one of the more popular courses some people have heard of, it's municipal.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, this was after one of my first sessions with the Vision 54 girls, so I hadn't quite got deep into it, but was, you know, trying to put it into play. Shoot four over on the front nine, and ended up, I think I had three birdies in a row on the back, and ended up shooting three under on the back, but had a chance to obviously shoot four under, and I just bogeyed the last hole coming in, silly. But, you know, it just shows you, you know, if you just stick to the process and essentially never give up and just maybe not try and do, you know, reinvent the wheel.
Oh, it's like, when Sav says, you know, I just gave up on expectations. You know, I remember an event, it was on the Quebec tour way back in the day. And, I'm sitting there five over par with five holes to go. And even par was the cut. And, even par was typically the cut at that event. So I said, you know, I'd have to birdie all five of the last holes. Right. And then I went, well, wait a second. Why not?
Why not me?
Yeah, why not?
And I birdied four of the last five, and plus one was the cut, and I went on. It was just like, come on, right?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Incredible. And it's just that your mind goes to work. It says, okay, short par four. I got to, and I'll drive it somewhere near the green, get up and down. Boom. Okay, par five. Let's get on in two, you know? Mm-hmm. And the last hole was a par five, and I three putted. And I thought, you know,
and then
they came over and they said, yeah, you're plus one, you made it. And I go, oh, that's cool.
It's incredible how powerful the mind is and how important it is to work with it and not against it.
Yeah.
And just change the mindset to something more positive and stick with it. Like just make a conscious decision and
it's like
just go.
Why not?
Yeah.
Right.
But it's harder. It's easier said than done. We all know that.
So you're back home. You're back home out west, Bryce?
Yeah, I. Just a nightmare flying. You know, I was supposed to get in two nights ago at Friday night at 11:40 p.m. Pacific. Ended up getting in at 2 a.m. Lost my clubs.
Oh, fun.
I luckily got them all back and everything's fine, but just, you know, and then I get home and it's freezing, you know, a couple inches of snow.
Yep. Welcome to Canada.
Welcome back. Why'd you leave?
You realize how much, you know, Arizona, Florida, wherever.
Yeah.
Just how, you know, it is, it's just a blessing, obviously, to be able to even be allowed to, you know, be able to go down there and spend time and play. And, but, yeah. It makes me realize how much I love golf too, and just
yeah,
you know, being warm.
Absolutely.
Being warm.
But never stop. I'm gonna hit balls today, and obviously watch an amazing World Cup.
Oh my gosh, we were watching it this morning. I'm
still in shock. I'm still digesting that game.
Yeah.
Well, I feel bad for Mbappe. I mean,
you have the game of your life and
four goals.
It still wasn't enough.
Four goals in a World Cup final.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I think it's the second hat trick ever or something they said.
Yeah.
Like there have not been many hat tricks, right? So
I mean, it was not looking good for France in the first 70 minutes of that game.
2-0 or whatever, right? And you're like, oh, man.
But they were just so on their heels too. Like it was just not what I was expecting. And even the commentators were like, we're not expecting like France to be so like on their heels kind of thing. It was more so expecting a 50-50 kind of matchup. And it wasn't until that first goal that kind of kick them in the butt.
It's like in the trees between two trees and chip it in.
Crazy. I was literally yelling at the TV.
It takes one good shot. Yeah.
That's it. It just, there it is. There's the momentum turner. Yeah, it's PK's is still bittersweet. It's a bittersweet kind of deal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can't feel bad for Mbappe.
I mean, yeah.
Four goals.
A crazy good game.
He's going back a hero. And they won it last time.
Yeah.
Like I was, you know, I was rooting for either one of them.
You can't be either or dad. It's one or the other.
Well, you know.
Well, I thought
it'd be cool. I'm like Switzerland. I'm neutral. What was that, Bryce?
I say it's cool to see Messi, you know.
Yeah.
Get that and all.
And on that kind of a note, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's hard to feel bad for France because Mbappe, he's had, you know, an unmatched career at such a young age. You know what I mean? Yeah. So.
It's like everything else is gravy. And how old is he?
He's turning 24 on Tuesday, apparently. They said his birthday's on Tuesday. He's turning 24. And you're like, this guy's already a legend.
Yeah. Oh, big yeah. time.
I take that feeling bad for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we Moo went in. We got a one of his club heads finally from Crank. And we had some shaft
adapters
put in for him, and he goes up for a training session, and both shaft adapters are, you know, coming apart at the seam.
Gonzo.
They're gonzo. But you were able to get a couple of decent feels out of him.
Yeah.
I mean, how many reps did you actually get with it?
Like 10 or 15.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was heartbreaking.
What head did you get?
The Crank head, the Fire head, the new model they released last year. And yeah, I was able to grab that one and try it out today. And unfortunately, the glue on the adapters wasn't holding up. So I'm going to have to go back and see if they can reapply with something that's a lot stronger.
Well, I mean, it's the strongest possible, but...
What kind of adapter is it? Like those Unifit ones?
No, it's their model, the adapter they created.
It's like a Callaway adapter or Ping adapter, okay. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a new head for them, and it's just nice to see Moo with a proper head now. You know, 5 degrees, and it looks very beefy, and it looks like it could handle it. It'll be interesting to see Moo try the new Callaway heads as well. Those new Paradigm heads look like the face is beefy enough to hold on a little longer. Hold on just a little longer, honey.
It's amazing with all our, you know, 3D printers and milling and all this stuff that we can't just get the same things left-handed.
I
get the price, you know, and money and all that, but
yeah.
It's a tough bridge, you know.
Well, when I was at Taboo with Mike, you know, Mike Weir he was with TaylorMade, and they made him the sweetest set of forged cavity back blades. And I'm going, well, when are we getting those for our clients? He says, well, they're not going to make them. I mean, what are you talking about? You just made the molds. They're ready to go. Just put a few into production. I mean, Canada will gobble them all up for you. You know, no, it's not feasible. You know, it's not, feasible monetarily for that, so we just did that. So they spent $100,000 on those heads, you know, and got a couple of sets of heads from Mike, and that was it.
Wow,
amazing!
And I was, you know, I was so disappointed. I mean, we were exclusive TaylorMade, and you know, the left-handed models at the time, they just had two out of the five different kinds of sets, and it was it tends to be. Tends to be that way for most companies. Ping's been pretty good. Callaway's been pretty good. Apart from, you know, I mean, the long drivers, you've got two lefties out there? Three?
There's about like a handful, I'd say.
Yeah, there's a handful of long drive lefties out there. And, you know, I guess you can't really, you can't blame them, but it's... It's annoying as hell.
Like you guys said in one of your previous podcasts, you're essentially competing just like with like inferior equipment.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not so much for me, but for Moo, it is.
Well, it's, and that's what I find
tough.
So, exactly. I mean, you've Moo missed going into the quarters or the semis by 1 yard, you know, so many different occasions this summer.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, man, if that, just the equipment, if the equipment was in order, that would have been, he'd have made it into, you know, some really sweet situations.
Yeah.
So for what he accomplished this year, his first year out there, as a long drive competitor is nothing short of incredible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we're going to do some more testing before the season starts. And, you know, Sav just got up to 111 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Congrats, Savannah.
Thanks.
You're going to be breaking drivers, too.
Imagine. A little 5'5" that's breaking it. Drivers.
Good YouTube video, probably, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
it. Ah, I just couldn't take it. I couldn't take the heat.
But it's crazy. The Moo has been running me through the speed training that he does, because I had never really done a proper speed session the way Moo does it. And dang, that is exhausting.
Exhausting, huh?
Oh, my goodness. Because especially with the swing caddy, it's heavy for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So every time Moo's like, okay, pull out the swing caddy, because we do it a few times during the session. And, you know, by the time the swing caddy comes out for the third time, I'm like, please, no. Please, no. And Moo's like, uh-uh. Do it. You gotta like stress out that CNS. So yeah, it's been a journey, but it's been working because I got up to 111. So
I, you know, Sav, I mean, I was hoping to get to 112 after the winter was done. You got to 111 before Christmas.
My second speed session? Third?
Third
speed session, yeah.
But that's after a lot of work in the gym too.
Yes.
Right? I mean, the foundations that you guys put in there. So it's...
I mean, I wouldn't be where I'm at without Moo's help, so...
It's exciting.
Yeah.
You know? It's exciting to see this coming to fruition. And it's exciting to see progress, right? Like Bryce's mental work this week. That's progress, Bryce.
It's fun, yeah.
Isn't it? And then, you know, then it's like, oh, okay, all I got to do is focus on this and I know good things are going to come out of it. And just knowing that and knowing where to point the darn weapon, you know?
Mm-hmm. 100%, yeah.
Is
how to practice, how to just, not how to think necessarily, but, yeah, you know, in the bare bones of it, yeah.
Yeah.
How to just think a little better and get that 1% better every day and mix it in with the working out, eating better. And, you know, yeah, sky's the limit. I mean,
yeah.
Beating out multiple Korn Ferry guys in a, regardless if it's a mini tour event, it sure as hell feels amazing.
100%.
And, you know, not to be the negative or object, but, you know, being objective and say, let's say I had a 3-under first round, I'm that much higher. You know, mm-hmm. shoot one over first round and I still finish in the top 10 just shows you that
that's it.
I can make the birdies and I can do that. So
that's a lot of what it is on the PGA Tour, right? It's like three rounds and there's one round where you just hanging in there, you know, mm-hmm. you're one under, even one over and then boom, you're back in the saddle the next day. And it's, you know, there's a lot of wins out there that way.
Well, my favorite this year was that Tom Kim. I think he quadruple bogeyed the first hole.
Wow.
And then ended up winning by 5 or something. I can't remember what event it was.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, hey, just let's count them up at the end for crying out loud, you know? And it's, let's just go. Yeah, I like it. He's got a nice... way about him, as far as, you know, he's not the biggest guy and he doesn't have the prettiest swing, but man, he's got some confidence and he knows how to get around the golf course. He knows how to put the ball in the hole.
Exactly.
That's
and that's another thing, kind of hopping back to like the Vision 54. You know, the technical skills are important, but if you don't have the human skills down and commitments and that beautiful swing is just a beautiful swing. And
yep.
an Instagram post, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hey, Bryce, what is Division 54? I'm not familiar with that.
So Vision 54
sorry.
Yeah. So, like, in terms of the 54, so that's, like, Lynn and Pia, mm-hmm. That's their company, right? And so 54 is if you were to birdie every hole, par 72.
Okay. That's Annika Sorenstam. They go way back and they said, hey, you know, it's like, think about it. You could birdie any hole on any golf course. So if you could birdie any hole on any golf course, why not do them all in one day? You know,
so that's
the Vision 54.
Is it like
so 54 is like the the perfect score.
Okay.
That's, 18 birdies.
Right.
And they think it's going to be possible. One of their athletes is going to do it. And yep. I mean, 59 has been done by Annika, obviously, 58 by Furyk. I don't yep. know if that was par 72, but, you know.
It's the only way to it is the way we're going about it, right, Bryce? You can't be walking up and going, I hope I don't hit it, in the trees, or I hope I don't snap hook it out of bounds. Nobody has ever shot 62 thinking that way, let alone 54. It's just not going to happen.
Well, so, imagine that 54. You know? What are you going to think about? what's going to run through your head for the putt for 54? Hope I don't miss it.
Right? Yeah. And it's just like, it's got to, like Mike Weir, when he made that 7-footer on 18 to get into a tie to go into a playoff with Len Matisse. Yeah. And he says, it's just another putt. And he knocks it straight into the hole, goes to the next hole, let's go. And Len Matisse just fell apart right there on the first hole in the playoff, and Mike just bogeyed to win on hole number 10. That 10's a beast, especially around, if you're on the wrong side of the pin around the 10th green, forget about it. So, and I remember, and Len Matisse is dominant left-handed guy. He's a backhander as well. Mm-hmm. So he had a backhander righty and a backhander lefty going in there. And Len, yanked and pulled his shot to the left of the green. And there's, it's obvious he didn't stay with that shot. And then he paid the price in the playoff. So I think, when you have everything, if you're consistently putting things together mentally, then eventually the physical will follow.
Yeah.
And then when that happens, then, hey, If it's for 54, so be it. I'm not going to get in the way of that, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like somebody breaking 80 for the first time. I had a student of mine. He said, I shot 78. I broke 80 for the first time. I said, you counted them afterwards, didn't you? He says, yeah. How did you know? Because if you would have been counting them on the 16th, that wouldn't have happened, mm-hmm. Right?
How many of my handicap friends, are like,
exactly.
I just got a par the last two.
Exactly. I just have to bogey the last two. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, we've all been there. I mean, I remember, in one of your tournaments, Sav, hey, all you got to do is, do this. And then you.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that irks me about tournament golf is when you have to switch your scorecards. I get the whole accountability thing and that. But when your playing partner asks you for your score after 9 holes, I'm like, don't talk to me. Like, I don't want to know. And you also don't need to know in this very moment. We'll count them up at the end.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And that's happened so many times. Even when I'm just out playing like a casual game with some of the ladies at the golf course. And they're always taking their scores and all that kind of stuff, right? They're very, very on top of that.
They're anal about it, right?
Yeah. And, the second you walk off the 9th green, okay, so you got this. And I'm like, first of all, I'm not really in the mood to care about that.
Let's do that at the bar after.
Yeah. I'm just like, it just ruins your whole, it bothers me so much. I'm like, why are you so concerned about my score? Like, focus on yourself.
That's something you eventually get past as you spend more time in tournament golf, because, and especially at that level too, right? When you get to the bigger events and the mini tour events and things like that, it's not that way at all.
Because like,
yeah, most guys don't ask.
Yeah,
like,
what'd you shoot?
Yeah,
yeah.
But I hate that too, Sav. So I know exactly, how many times I've played with a guy, a group of guys at the club and, what are you at?
Yeah.
What are you at? 600, 700?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. And also
and
the fact that you have to also be conscious of what your playing partner is shooting at the same time, because you have to like check your scores after. And I was thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, if golf is this honor-based game, okay, and you need to be an honorable player, an honorable person, be honest with your score, with yourself, with your playing partners. In my head, I'm like, well, why don't you actually put that into practice by just keeping your own scorecard?
Yep.
And if you're not honest, well, that's on you.
Well,
kind of thing.
At the highest level, when there's millions of dollars involved,
but,
I think it's
but
different.
But at the same time, when you're playing at the highest level on the PGA Tour, there's cameras all around, so you can't fake
that's,
it.
That's true.
Everyone's counting.
Well, yeah. To the lead groups too. That's the problem. It's not always on everybody. And then you guys, like, I don't know if you ever saw that thing from the Nebraska. There was like a pre-qualifier for Corn Ferry or whatever. It might have been first stage, and the guy like. Him and his caddy blatantly cheated.
Yeah, I remember seeing
times that. And like found those balls and all that, right?
Yeah.
Just I wish everybody was honest, but that's just it sucks. But
like in a perfect world, you know?
Yeah.
You learn though, I mean, to keep score and stuff. I personally like I never add up anybody's score. If I really don't know the person's not like what they made on that hole, I'll usually ask a few holes later.
Yeah.
You know, or put what I think they made.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a scoring table issue too, right?
Yeah.
But
well, Sav is basically got that from me, and I got it from playing with Scottish seniors when I was a junior player. And boy, I tell you, the Scots are sticklers for the rules.
Yeah.
And it was so enjoyable because, you know, when I went to tournaments after I played junior events, I knew my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I went, you cannot be doing that, lad, right?
Yeah.
I try to make my best Scottish accent, but, and then, you know, being able, knowing when to call when I was on the Canadian tour afterwards, knowing when to call the marshal and how to use the marshal out on the golf course, right?
Yeah, I've had a couple of those where two girls in my playing and like in my group were, well, okay, so one girl, she ended up on the cart path, right? And where she was on the cart path, either side of it would have been fine.
Right, she was right in the middle of it.
Because it was a fine line between which side it was leaning towards kind of thing.
Right.
And so for me, and based on where she was, there was no advantage either way. Whether it was on the left side of the cart path or on the right side of the cart path. Mm. She was still in the rough. She was still the same distance.
Yeah.
Same everything, right? So I couldn't give two hoots about it, right?
Right.
And the other girl in my group, she was so upset at the whole situation and the whole like misunderstanding about everything that the marshal had to come. We were 10 minutes late behind the group in front of us. And she was like almost in tears because of how like upset she was at the fact that it was an inch away from where it was. It was just like
the good old righteous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, you got it's like that's the other end of the scale, oof. Right? I've played with some people that are really loose with the rules, and I had to get into another group on the back nine because I just couldn't take it anymore.
But it ruined my round.
But that would be well. That's the thing. I mean, that when the tempers flare up and everybody loses their, you know,
mm-hmm. and to top it all off, it was a girl who spoke English and not French, and a girl who spoke French and not English. So I was right in the middle of it trying to translate everything. And then when the marshal came over, the marshal didn't speak English, so she couldn't communicate with one of the girls. And I was like, absolute shit show.
Oh, no.
I need to go.
Please take me away. You just walk away.
That's it. That's what I did at one point. I was like, you figure it out on your own. I'm walking away.
Horse hockey.
Oh, it just ruined it because you're in like a good vibe. The group's vibing well. And then one thing like that happens and everything goes to shit.
Yeah. I'm sure Bryce has a few stories like that too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And numerous.
It's that one.
Especially even, you know, I've played in the, you know, Canada Cup a few times and, yeah, just language barriers can always make things more interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good, you know, that's a good word there. Interesting.
Very.
That's a good way to put it there, Bryce.
You'll always get something interesting in your round of golf.
Yeah.
Like, there was one time I teed off, we're on the first hole, and the girl in my group, I could already tell right off the bat she was going to be a slow player. And the marshal comes over to me and he goes, yeah, just make sure you keep up the pace of play because she is a very slow player. And I was like, why are you telling
me this? Why are you putting this on me?
This is not my responsibility.
You see, Bryce, that's one of the things I hate about the rules. And I found a way to fight back in one of my PGA Tour events on the Canadian PGA Tour. I was in PEI. I was playing with a guy who was super slow. And we were already two holes back after four holes, okay? And I put him on my clock, and he was taking like a minute 30 to 2 minutes on each putt. And I knew it would unravel very quickly. So I called the marshal in. And I called the marshal in, and I go, Marshal, could you please put us on the clock? I wasn't going to take it. And he looks at me really strange because I'm just as much at risk of getting a penalty because it's a group penalty, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he says, yeah, gentlemen, you're two holes back. You're on the clock. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me and he knew
why.
And because I'm sure he knew the other player was a slow player. And after two holes, the other player says, Marshall, I feel like I'm being rushed. And Marshall says, dude, you just took a minute six on that last shot. Get your stuff together. And I was just, praise the Lord. You know, hallelujah. I had the greatest back nine. I think it was two under on the back nine. I didn't make the cut that week, but I had a glorious back nine. And the other guy was, you know, he was just completely discombobulated. And I'm hoping that he learned from that because he really, I mean, I think it's pure theft. You know, this stealing time from other players is theft.
Well, and it's in the rules, but they don't enforce it, right?
Too, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I found a way to enforce it, bud.
Call the marshal.
And that's a great one, too. And I know, like, Brooks Koepka will say he, like, went to the wash. Like, he'll go to the bathroom or something and make sure that they get behind to, like, you know, speed guys up.
Right, right.
Or whatever. Mm.
Yeah,
I guarantee you they're not committed in their think box or play box, those guys that are taking that long.
And that's where I think the shot clock has got to be the best way to go.
I think so, too.
Yeah. You get a shot clock in there. I mean, it's like the countdown, right?
It's happening in baseball, I think, now. Pitching clock.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'll eventually make it. Yeah. They've already been dabbling in on the European Tour, right?
Yeah. Well, and even the LPGA Tour apparently is quite a lot better about enforcing slow play as well. But
yeah, I think you just put a shot clock down. That's it. And then you have a referee in there going, okay, the shot clock started. You now have 40 seconds.
Yeah, because if you're having rounds or anything over 4.5 hours, it's just ridiculous at that point.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's where, you know, society's going because it's so much more fast paced now, right? Yeah. Although if it's slow and you're allowed to get on your phone, then it's really good. Long day.
Yeah.
Right? Hang on, I'm just enjoying my Netflix right now while in between shots.
Yeah,
hang on just a second. You know, this is a good part here coming up. Well, all right, man. We could be doing this all day. When are you heading back to AZ?
January 6th. So,
oh, beautiful.
Get back to the heat and
after the holidays.
Another event mid-January. So, yeah.
Looking forward to it, man. It's
I can't wait, to be honest. Yeah.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on and talking about it, and looking forward to seeing what the future brings, and you know, in wonderful anticipation. This game is so good for anticipation. You gotta love it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, happy holidays to everyone. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And we will talk to you again very soon.
All the best.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.